Hey, listeners, what you're about to hear is an excerpt of the Filmcast After Dark. As a reminder, the Filmcast After Dark is an exclusive bonus episode that's released about once a week that you can find at patreon.com/filmpodcast, where you can also sign up for ad-free episodes as well as early access to episodes. In this After Dark, we discuss Guy Ritchie's The Ministry of Ungentlemanly Warfare, which was just out in theaters recently. We recorded this a couple weeks ago. A quick note to let you know that you should assume there will be spoilers for the movie in this conversation. So you've been warned. Do not listen unless you've seen the film or don't care about spoilers. Enjoy this excerpt. I think it was a lot of fun. We discussed the filmographies of Matthew Vaughn versus Guy Ritchie at the end, and that was a fun discussion. But yeah, patreon.com/filmpodcast, how you can sign up for more episodes. Thanks to everyone at patreon.com/filmpodcast who supports the show and makes it possible.
What's the plan?
To neutralize the German U-boats in the North Atlantic.
We're losing the war.
Hitler is not playing by the rules, so neither are we.
We both know that I'm not very popular with the administration.
The reason they find you unattractive is the very reason I find you attractive.
If I'm to do this, I'll need my own team. You won't like them. They're all...
No!
Mad.
All right, let's talk about Guy Ritchie's The Ministry of Ungentlemanly Warfare. We'll probably share some very brief non-spoilery thoughts before we get to full spoilers on this movie. Jeff Cannata, going to start with you today.
All right.
What'd you think of this movie?
I thought it was fun. I have some problems with it, but I overall had a pretty fun time. I would describe The Ministry of Ungentlemanly Warfare as what if Inglourious Bastards and Ocean's 11 had a baby, and it was directed by Guy Ritchie. I think the stars of this movie are fun. There are some moments where it really gets cooking and you are in this kind of Ocean's 11 heist that is going wrong and we're having to improvise on our feet and really fun people are doing really fun things. And I, in those moments, I was having a great time. And that's enough, I think, to recommend watching it. I think it's, you know, it's directed with aplomb. It is that Guy Ritchie slickness. The biggest problem I have with this movie is that it purports to be a true story that at no point plays even remotely like it could have possibly happened. Right. This is a Guy Ritchie movie, not in the Guy Ritchie's The Covenant template.
Right. But which does feel very down to earth.
Yes. Right? He's capable of making a true story that feels true. I think The Covenant, though exaggerated in some elements, did feel grounded and possible. You know what I mean?
Jeff and I both really liked that movie. Actually.
I thought it was excellent.
It had some problems, but.
Yes.
Yeah. Overall.
But this is much more like Snatch or The Man from U.N.C.L.E. You know, this is like classic Guy Ritchie slickness, blithe disregard for danger. At no point do any of these characters feel like they can fail. They are superhuman. They are superheroes who blithely stare in the face of danger and let the bullet zip inches from their nose because they know they are going to be amazing.
They have no fear.
They have no fear. Yeah. They have
this
no...
is Jeff's same issue with The Beekeeper as well, right? Same issue. Yeah.
Honestly, I mean, I think this movie is way better than The Beekeeper, but the problem with that is that when you... that can be very fun and is very fun in this movie. It is very fun in... his other movies, you know, in The Gentleman, in the TV show, in The Gentleman, the movie. And when you have these like cooler than cool dudes who have just seen it all and are just on the strength of their own charm and self-confidence can slip through any situation and work the angles. That's fun, man. That's classic James Bond. It's a very fun thing. It's Ocean's 11 in a lot of ways. It's like you get to hang out with the coolest dudes on the block who are the best they are at what they do. And it is just a ride to be with those folks. I love a movie like that. That is this movie. Unfortunately, it is also trying to have its cake and eat it too by saying, hey, this really happened. And in fact, we're going to show you the pictures of these people at the end of the movie and try to make it into a real thing that happened in World War II. And it's like, okay, it didn't happen like this at all. You know, not remotely like this. And so part of me is like, you can't really do that. Like, that's not the assignment. You've failed the assignment. Mm-hmm. You know, if the assignment was make a fun movie that gives me a cool ride and feels like, you know, a superhero movie or a kind of heightened action movie, you succeeded. But that's not the assignment that you are telling me you're doing. What you're telling me you're doing is telling me about this amazing thing that happened in history, and Churchill was there, and, you know, like, it really happened. This is a big, important historical moment with real humans that I'm, you know, dramatizing. And it just doesn't play that way at all. So I kind of bristled at that, even if I recognized that the moment to moment was pretty entertaining. And I had a good time. I wish there was a little bit more stakes in the sense of potential of failure, potential of fear, potential of, you know, I wish that these guys weren't just supremely confident every moment of the movie. I think you'd have a more dramatic, there's no drama here. It's just kind of excitement and how's it going to happen. But that said, I had a good time with Ministry of Ungentlemanly Warfare.
Despite everything you just said.
Yeah, I mean, I had a good time. Big problems with it. It's not in my top five Guy Ritchie movies, but I think there's charming actors doing charming stuff, kind of some fun action moments. And there is one section in the middle of the movie that takes place at night that is genuinely awesome. Like, where we have different groups of people doing different things in different places, Ocean's 11 style, and they're all trying to pull off this very difficult heist, and it doesn't go as planned. And in that section alone, I was like, I'm having a really good time right now. And that was enough for me to give it a mitigated thumbs up.
Devinder Hardwar, your thoughts on Ministry of Ungentlemanly Warfare?
I think the comparison to Inglourious Basterds is pretty apt. They're very similar movies, and it kind of shows like how different Tarantino and Guy Ritchie are as artists at some point.
Can I interject on that actually and say that Scott Mendelson, I think, gave this analogy, which I think is really perfect, which is the SAT analogy would go, Den of Thieves is to Heat.
Sure.
As Ministry of Ungentlemanly Warfare is to Inglourious Basterds.
Absolutely fair.
Bad. And if that sounds awesome to you, then you're going to like this movie. And if that sounds like one of the worst things to ever happen to cinema, you're not going to like this. I mean, a lot of people
maybe watch more movies because Den of Thieves is not terrible.
That's true. A lot of people don't like Den of Thieves. A lot of people think Den of Thieves sucks. I think Den of Thieves is great.
Yeah. There is room for the Den of Thieves, and there is room for Heat. And there's room for Inglourious Basterds.
Apparently, the Den of Thieves sequel is going to happen, which I'm really excited.
Of Thieves? Den of More Thieves?
It's called Den of Thieves 2 Pantera.
Pantera in it?
It's going to be a sequel to the movie, and it's supposed to be coming out in late 2024. I'm really excited about Den of Thieves Part 2. Anyway, okay.
So given that comparison, by the way, thank you, Scott Mendelson. Yes. I enjoy it on the level that I enjoy something like Den of Thieves. I think it's a really fun, you know, historical action film with a great cast. Put Henry Cavill in everything Guy Ritchie does, please, because clearly, like, they have fun together. Henry Cavill seems to have fun in these roles. It is very much like... James Bond never really shows vulnerability, right? Like, especially in the earlier movies. In this is very much Man from U.N.C.L.E. style, where like these are just superheroes going on big set pieces, coming up with heists and whatnot. I think Man from U.N.C.L.E. is a much better film and a much more fun film. This thing could have been tightened up. It is 2 hours long and it feels maybe 15 or 20 minutes too long. There are stretches like towards the third act where I feel like I'm trying to wait for the movie to get on with it or something, because there is a lot of setup at times, but there are so many great sequences. I love this entire cast, like Alan Ritchson, just the way he looks, the shirts he wears, Alan Ritchson, TV's Reacher with a bow and arrow. you know, with a bow knife, just like slicing up Nazis. Like, there is a pure enjoyment level that I take from this movie. And it's just like people that I like having a lot of fun killing Nazis. I think that's pretty enjoyable. It could have been tighter. And I think that would have made for an overall better movie. But man, like, I love this cast. Isa Gonzalez, I love her in everything pretty much. But she is killing it in this movie specifically. Like, what she is trying to, I guess, what she's trying to portray. It's funny that Cary Elwes is in this too, because he's also in Inglourious Bastard. So, like, he's just going to be in everything, I guess. Also, I want to shout out to Babs Olusunmokun, who is in, he's Jamis from yes. Dune.
Yeah.
And I think he has, like, a great screen presence, a great, like, just sense, a great aura on screen. And I loved watching him, and I loved watching him come up with things together with Isaac Gonzalez's character. So I just love watching these people, and I think they're fun and entertaining. The movie just kind of drags after a certain point, and maybe it could have been punched up and tightened up and made more funnier at times. But I really enjoyed the ride. Like, I'm very glad to see Guy Ritchie having, you know, success now after, I think, having a kind of a quiet period for a while. So, yeah, it's good for him. I had a lot of fun with this.
Is Cary Elwes in Inglourious Basterds? I don't think that's true, Devendra.
He's in Rebel Moon Part 2.
Yes, he's in Rebel. I think you got that confused with Rebel Moon Part 2.
Rebel Moon Part 2. No, I saw something on IMDb that connected both of them, but maybe I'm thinking something else.
I don't think he's in that movie. So, okay. Yeah. But he was in Guy Ritchie's last similar film, Operation Fortune Ruse de Guerre, as well.
Basically playing the same character.
But basically playing, like, the identical character.
A movie that still doesn't exist, by the way. Whenever we talk about the title of that movie, or we talk about, like, the plot of that movie.
I have watched that movie.
And
it has no residual presence in my brain. Okay, Ministry of Ungentlemanly Warfare.
Mm-hmm.
Let me just say, Jeff Cannata, that the beginning of the movie opens with the phrase, based on a true story, right? Now, one of my favorite renditions of that phrase is in, I think, David O. Russell's American Hustle.
Yep.
And it starts with the phrase, some of this stuff actually happened. and then I'm like, that's perfect. I love that, because it's like acknowledging you made a bunch of shit up. So whenever I see based on a true story, that's literally just what I think. Is
Same.
Some of this stuff actually happened.
Don't actually take it literally.
That said, I agree with Jeff that when you show the actual people at the end, you are making some claim to veracity. Like, if you hadn't done the thing at the end, I would have been mostly okay with it. But yes, I understand why you're bothered, because at the end they're like, and look, Isaac Gonzalez was actually a much less attractive person in real life.
Look how accurate we were with this movie.
Right. It's a look how accurate situation. And yeah, there were a lot of deviations, but that's not why.
After doing the events in this movie, this person went on to do this and this. And I don't believe they did the events in this movie.
Did that guy really kill, like, 50 Nazis with a bow and arrow?
Yeah,
is that really what happened to that guy?
Convinced that's how it went down.
I had a lot of fun with this movie. I mean, I think I tried not to think too hard about it. It's interesting, kind of, the approach that it took to some of its action scenes, right? Like, there's multiple action scenes in this movie of just these guys mowing down Nazis, like mowing them down without thinking about it. It's like, oh, you know, young 18-year-old Nazi, same as like 45. They're all the same evil person.
I love the sound of the guns, by the way. Like, they have, like, silenced submachine guns or something.
Quiet guns, right?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
In real life, for those who don't know, when you see a silencer in a movie, like a silenced pistol in a movie, it sounds much louder in real life, right?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And they didn't have modern silencer technology when World War II was happening. So I have to imagine they're basically going in incognito into these.
Yeah, this,
like,
is Call of Duty level.
Heavily Nazi infested lairs. Mowing down guys with no one can hear anything, right? Even though they're using machine guns, basically, or automatic weapons, I should say. That bothered me more than, like, the based on a true story, Jeff, was like, I don't believe the killings actually went down like this. You know, like,
yeah, nothing that happened in this movie. I think these people stole boats. I think that's the
parties happened. I've read several pieces, like, the parties did happen. And apparently, yeah, like, it happened a little crazier. The rescuing somebody from a Nazi base happened. So somebody said not a single shot was actually fired, but I'm reading a quote here. One Nazi fainted. A bunch of them were in the shower. The commandant had a head or a hairnet on, and they all gave up immediately when they saw these four or five guys. That's how they rescued the dude from
the
Nazi
base. That's hilarious. Because in this movie, well, yeah, hundreds of people die.
Yes. So, yes, nothing went down as it happened in the movie. I think also, like, the movie is just weird. Like, again, I enjoyed the movie, would recommend. It's like, if it popped onto TNT on an afternoon while you're doing errands in your house, or not errands, but, like, you know, cleaning your house or something, it's a perfect movie to leave on and watch. But I thought the movie was a little odd in just, like, the setup. Like, the movie opens with a vicious set of killings. These guys are freaking sociopaths, I think, is what we get, like, right from the beginning.
Perhaps war turns us into sociopaths. I don't know.
Who are the real monsters?
Would you call them, I don't know, ungentlemanly?
You could. Mm. One could. You might think that they belong to some kind of group, some organization of some kind, perhaps a ministry of some sort, that wage something. Okay. Anyway, and then the movie doesn't really, like, maintain that momentum. Like, I think it's torn in a couple of different directions, right?
Yeah, momentum.
It wants
to
be like, hey, we're fun sociopathically just murdering these Nazis endlessly. And then, but also, we want you to take us seriously a little bit. You know, like, take us seriously a little. Some of these things actually happened. Some of these people, like, were fighting for good stuff. You know, like, and I think it just ends up stuck between two different tones a little bit.
The person I was thinking of, by the way, the villain, Till Schweiger, was in Inglourious Basterds.
Yes.
So yes, that's kind of the similarity there.
That's a character that barely speaks in Inglourious Basterds, but he's the main villain in this one.
Just look like an evil Nazi. Can you do that, Till?
Yeah.
The funny thing about Inglourious Basterds is that it takes place in what is distinctly an alternate history. Mm-hmm. And yet feels more like it could have happened than this movie to me.
Right. Also Inglourious Basterds doesn't open by saying based on a true story, right?
Right. Mm-hmm. Well, that's what I'm saying. So, but yeah. I mean, it takes place in World War II. You feel like that movie, like, I could kind of believe that went down.
It has. Right. It's better at emotional truths.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, because it's also not like a pure all-out action movie. It is doing multiple things. Yeah.
Right. And this one tries to be a pure all-out action movie.
That but occasionally
there's not that many,
like,
action
heart.
Scenes, right? There's a couple action scenes. There's one at the beginning. There's one in the middle. And then the final sequence is a heist sequence that has some action.
That goes on for a long time.
It does. And there's
that
lots
heist
of
sequence.
Action.
Like,
the movie commits a crime, though, that I think is nearly unforgivable, which is you introduce a character, Isaac Gonzalez's character, who is apparently really good at shooting things, and then you, as far as I can tell, like, basically never have her shoot anything, if I recall correctly.
That character's
very
messy.
Strange.
Yeah, she also doesn't end up actually doing much, right? The whole point of her was to sort of, like, seduce the leader, the lead Nazi, but also that doesn't really amount to much. Like,
doesn't
is she trying
out?
To get information? Well, if it doesn't work out, it's like, what is the goal? Is she trying to get information from him? To me, it was unclear, like, what the thing they were trying to do there was. Yeah,
she was trying to keep him occupied while they do their stuff. The thing that she, I mean, her efficacy comes in finding out the fact that they have reinforced the hull.
That was good. Yeah.
If she hadn't been there, they would never have found that out and they would have failed. So
the train sequence, by the way, like, it's not just the action. Like, I love the stealing the briefcase in the train sequence, like, moments of, like, tension there. Like, that's good stuff.
That was cool.
But I really do want to reinforce what you said, Dave. It is bizarre how much time and effort is put into hammering home the fact that this chick can shoot literally any weapon.
Right.
Very, very well.
Yes. She's a marks person.
She is incredible with any weapon that you give her. And that never comes into play.
Never
whatsoever.
Comes into play again. It's almost like having a movie where you gather together people from around the galaxy each with a specific set of skills. Yeah. And then those skills.
And then they all
never
they do is
come into
harvest
play.
Wheat.
No, and they never come into play.
I mean,
anyway.
It's just like, we are really, they really want us to know how awesome
she could have gotten
is.
Some kill shots at the end.
She,
like,
doesn't do anything.
Yeah.
With that skill, I mean.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
It's very strange. She has that moment where she pulls the gun out of her crotch You know,
well, I guess that's kind of the thing, right? That is the sort of like she can point blank, not like she can aim it.
Yeah, she killed that guy at the end, but that required zero skills at all. Like,
yeah,
he was right there. He was like literally three feet away, point blank, right?
Yeah,
so
she got him right in the head. Yeah,
yeah. Yeah,
a lot of great sequences and a lot of, I mean, I think it's just the actors involved too. Like, sometimes that works out for Guy Ritchie. Sometimes it doesn't. I don't think Aubrey Plaza worked out too well for Guy Ritchie in Rose
Operation
Digger.
Fortune. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
I appreciated Aubrey Plaza trying to do something different in that movie. You know, like, that's not her typical role. She doesn't usually play the guy in the chair, you know.
But, I think she had some comments. Was that the comment she was making about British directors not being able to work with them, or like just not understanding what they wanted at times? If this movie was a little tighter, I feel like we would be even more raving over it.
The craziest thing about the casting in this movie is that Henry Cavill is in it, and he's not the muscle guy.
Yeah, yes. You have somebody double the size of Henry Cavill. Amazing. Yes.
Henry Cavill keeps his shirt on the entire movie.
Right, right.
It's like, I can't compete against this. TV's
Alan Richardson is I'm not even going to just say fitness goals. He is also just like man goals. Like, I don't know if you saw his interview in Hollywood Reporter, but he seems to be a very well-balanced individual. Like, just a guy who... I aspire to be like Alan Richardson. Just put that out there. All right.
In every level
in
possible.
In every level. So, and I don't love his performance in this movie. I think he's like pretty, I'm going to say, I think he never really settled on an accent in this movie. He kind of was very exaggerated at first.
He was very Swedish in the opening.
Yeah. And then it's like,
they're doing a fake accent in the beginning.
Mm-hmm. No, but then throughout it felt like I could never nail down what his accent was. Now, maybe that's just me, but yeah.
He's a lot of fun. Also, like, hey, if we need a new Sabretooth in an X-Men movie, it damn well better be Alan Richardson. You don't even need to add much makeup. Like, he's just a big dude. He can kick Wolverine's ass, apparently.
I'm just glad Henry Golding is still out there working. Guy Ritchie seems to like him. Yeah. He was in The Gentlemen as well.
Very big part for him from a guy who was like leading in a bunch of films, too. But yeah.
Yes, it is true. Snake Eyes has fallen a long way since being, you know, headlining
Of Crazy Rich Asians, right?
Yes,
like, I want him to be more leading and stuff, but it is fun to see him here.
He's cool in this movie. Yeah.
About Rory Kinnear under tons of Churchill makeup.
This is one of the worst Churchill impressions I've ever seen. I don't know about you guys, but I thought it was actually the worst part of it. Worse than the silence. Automatic weapons, worse than the, you know, the end credits and showing
worse
the real
than having
people.
Ian Fleming be in part of the mission, which was apparently a thing, but not like so directly involved. But yeah,
Rory Kinnear, enormously talented actor. It's obvious. It's just Rory Kinnear with prosthetics on, doing a terrible
doing this voice.
Guy Ritchie was like, I saw the movie Men, and I think Rory Kinnear can do this.
Literally, if he just spoke normally, the movie would be about 5% better. Like, if he just spoke.
That's not how Churchill spoke.
That's more like a Nixon, Jeff.
I know, I'm doing Nixon right now. I am not a crook.
Yeah. Anyway. All right. Any other thoughts on Ministry of Ungentlemanly Warfare?
It's a fun time.
You know? It's a fun time at the movies.
Yeah.
I did not love it, but I had a good enough time that I would recommend it. It's better than Rebel Moon Part 2.
Anything is better than Rebel Moon Part 2.
This movie... it has, I think, an extremely high Rotten Tomatoes score. It has a score of...
like 75.
72%.
Yeah.
But I think this is one of those things where you see the weakness of the Rotten Tomatoes score happen, where everyone just kind of liked it, I think. I don't think there's a lot of people that feel like really strongly about it.
Yeah, right? You can't... I will tell you what's better than this movie. The Gentleman TV show.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
That's true. That is more fun.
Way better. Way more fun. Way more inventive. Way cooler. And this movie's fine, but it still has
some good set pieces. Like, as far as like, I've seen Guy Ritchie sink far lower in some of his other films. So, you know, true.
Aladdin, yeah. Anybody?
Mm-hmm. We don't talk about Aladdin.
Wow.
We don't talk about Aladdin.
One thing that is amazing. I mean, I've commented on it multiple times during the main show, but like, his output is really astonishing. Actually, like he made two movies that came out in 2023. He made Wrath of Man, and he made two movies in 2019. 2021 was Wrath of Man. This movie's coming out. He's got another movie called In the Grey coming out next year. Again, with Henry Cavill, Jake Gyllenhaal, Isaac Gonzalez.
Love to see it. Love to see it. Yeah.
He's just, yeah, he's always working. And some of the movies hit more than others. But also, this movie, I think, opened the best out of his last three movies.
Mm-hmm.
So it didn't do well. It's not like a hit. But yeah, I mean, I just appreciate he's become oddly one of the journeyman directors, right? Like he's become, that's not who we thought he would be when he started his career, but he's like one of the guys where he's like, he's just consistently working, putting out solid, not great, not amazing, not terrible work.
He has a thing, he has a thing that he tends to go for. He has the British gangster stuff.
What is that thing? The thing is like manly men being men. That's kind of like,
have it, yeah.
That's a
fun
lot
movies
of,
about dudes.
That's a lot of what he does these days, right?
Kind of taking over the Tony Scott mantle a little bit, I'd say. So I don't know. Like,
I think he's just a slightly more grounded Matthew Vaughn.
Yeah,
don't say that though, Jeff. Because Matthew Vaughn started as a slightly more grounded Guy Ritchie, is the thing. If you remember Layer Cake, so
that's true.
Yeah,
I don't know, guys. If you put up Matthew Vaughn's filmography next to Guy Ritchie's, I would choose Guy Ritchie's 10 out of 10.
No, easily, like, easily.
It's such a more...
I have a harder time with that choice.
It's such a more calm, cohesive filmography. Like,
I don't... Again, wrong dude, words. I don't know. Wrong words, but...
Kick-Ass, Kingsman.
X-Men.
X-Men.
Yeah, okay. First, he won
Stardust.
A lot of credit.
I love Stardust.
Layer Cake is very good. Like, Matthew Vaughn has far fewer films, but I think a better batting average. But he's gotten worse. Like, where they are today, I'm more interested in what Guy Ritchie's doing compared to.
Absolutely. For Matthew those who Vaughn. Don't know, by the way, Matthew Vaughn and Guy Ritchie used to be like producing partners. They used to.
Matthew Vaughn was his producer.
I'm bringing it up because it was long enough ago that people might not even remember.
We got to reiterate the context here. But when I had my contentious interview with Matthew Vaughn, I was like, "So, any thoughts? Like, would you be? Do you think Guy Ritchie would end up producing anything you're doing?" And he laughed me off. He was like, no, Guy Ritchie's not producing anything that I'm doing.
Guy Ritchie directed Lock, Stock, and Two Smoking Barrels. Matthew Vaughn produced that movie. Yes. I think he also produced Snatch.
Snatch, yes. Yeah, he did.
And so they had like this partnership, and then they went their own ways because Matthew Vaughn's like, I want to direct movies too. And now they have quite different filmographies. I would still like... Yeah,
there are a lot of misses in the Guy Ritchie, you know.
There's a lot of misses in the Matthew Vaughn.
I would say, you know, what was interesting is like for a while, Guy Ritchie was kind of in director jail. Like he made Swept Away, he made Revolver, and then Rock and Rolla, and none of those movies did particularly well.
Yeah, right. I remember
like, none of them were like Rock and Rolla was the closest thing to something that was like moderately successful, but like he made Revolver in 2005. That was a disaster, right?
It wasn't until Man from U.N.C.L.E. where he really...
Well, no. Sherlock Holmes really put it back on the map. That movie made $524 million worldwide. Like
David
that was
Chen's
a massive
favorite
success.
Adaptation your favorite
of Sherlock Holmes ever made.
That's actually a knock against him for me now.
I don't know about favorite, but guys, I don't even need to make the argument because H. Bomber Guy, the guy who did that 4-hour plagiarism video, he already made a 3-hour long video about why Benedict Cumberbatch Sherlock Holmes sucks. So I don't need to even make the argument because it's already been done before.
I think I'm gonna take Matthew Vaughn in this.
What?
I'm talking. Well, so you're talking about overall. Yeah.
Defend it,
Jeff. Overall.
Those are good movies.
I love Snatch. Yeah. I love Lock, Stock. I think the Gentleman TV show is great. I don't think there's anything in the entire Guy Ritchie oeuvre that is to me as good as either Kick-Ass or Stardust.
Ooh.
I love those movies. Those are great movies. The first Kick-Ass is so good. So fun. And Stardust is awesome.
I think you have a point if you look at the entire totality. If we're taking a mean average of their works, you have a point, Jeff. But if we're looking at today, as these artists, as they exist today, I feel like Guy Ritchie has found like a really interesting groove that he's like come back to. Whereas Matthew Vaughn,
I think
is
they're trending in different directions.
Yes, yes.
I don't even agree. I don't even agree with the mean. Like I think like mean average. I think Matthew Vaughn is still higher. Like
that's what I'm saying.
Guy Ritchie's still higher. That's what I mean.
Yeah.
Like, I would choose Guy Ritchie all the time over Matthew Vaughn.
You just listed he has not made many movies, and you've just listed a few that were outright failures.
Let me get into it. Right? Lock, Stock, and Two Smoking Barrels. Literally watched it.
Good.
This last week, literally press play on Lock, Stock, and Two Smoking Barrels this last week.
Skinny Jason Statham. Who would have thought?
That is a good movie in my opinion. Snatch. Also good. Incredible, like, just stylistically, it's really out there. The use of music in that movie is, like, Tarantino-esque, like, level in how good it is. Then he made three pretty bad movies. Uh-huh. Swept Away, Revolver, and Rock and Roll. None of those were very good. Then he made Sherlock Holmes and Sherlock Holmes Game of Shadows. Those are great. They're a lot of fun.
Debatable.
Man from Uncle, a blast.
Mm-hmm.
King Arthur, Legend of the Sword. Terrible, but... Friend of the show, Danish Side, seems to like that movie. Aladdin, hate it. Thanks, I hate it. The Gentleman, not great. Okay, Wrath of Man. That movie holds a special place in my heart because it's not good. Only is it good, but it's the first movie I saw in a theater after the pandemic began.
Really?
My wife rented a theater so we could go see Wrath of Man together. Mm-hmm. And I remember seeing that movie and being like, movies are great, guys. Movies a beautiful art form. And then Guy Ritchie's A Covenant, really solid.
No. You're skipping Operation Fortune, Rose the Guerre.
No, it happens after that.
I'm looking at...
You're right.
I'm looking
Operation
at
Fortune, Rose the Guerre, pretty bad. At worst...
You're going to start like keeping a score list.
At worst, a nothing film. It's not like actively terrible. But it has no residual presence of the brain.
Mm-hmm.
Guy Ritchie's A Covenant, great. Ministry of Ungentlemanly Warfare, fun, solid. Okay, so... Now that I say it all like that.
Yeah.
The high highs are not probably not as high.
Uh-huh. Yeah, that's my point.
As a layer cake or a first class.
Dude, look at this. Right? Look at the layer cake, Stardust, Kick-Ass, X-Men First Class. Four bangers.
Bangers.
His first four movies. Now, trending down, because I think
Kingsman
love the first,
for one
the
is
first
good.
Kingsman's awesome.
Yeah.
Second Kingsman, less so. The Kingsman,
doesn't exist.
Argyle, terrible. So trending the wrong direction, but I'll take his first four movies. Boom, 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 boom.
His batting average is higher because he has fewer films in general. So
I still would take because I'm less angry when I watch Guy Ritchie's movies. You know, like Matthew Vaughn's movies are like baffling and upsetting. Just like, I don't know if you've seen The Kingsman, but that's just a weird
I have.
Movie.
The King's Man.
No, The King's Man, right?
I have seen it. We reviewed it.
Yeah. I didn't see it.
No, so we didn't.
You guys did that together.
We didn't review it?
No.
Did you see
it? The King's Man with...
Ralph Fiennes.
Ralph Fiennes, yes. There's a whole flashback sequence at the beginning where I've definitely watched this movie.
Okay, we never reviewed it.
Okay, well, I talked about it.
I remember being the only person talking about it on the show.
Mm-hmm. No, I took my wife to see this. We watched it together.
And you loved it so much you brought it up on the show.
The World War II, this crazy assassination thing, that attempt that happens at the beginning. I saw this whole movie. There's Rasputin is in it, and there's a weird fucking fight scene with Rasputin.
Okay. I don't think I've ever heard you talk about this movie, Jeff.
I've never heard you
talk about this movie on the podcast. So
I 100% watched it.
Okay. Well, anyway, it was bad.
I agree with you. I said it was.
All right.
Kingsman and Argyle are really bad trends because it's the fact that he's talking about like more Argyle movies.
Right.
And I think Kingsman 2 was not great. I like
Kingsman
1.
2 was not great, but it was not awful. It was not Argyle.
There were definitely like red flags in Kingsman 1 or Kingsman 2, and that was Elton John's flying kick split.
Right.
Where we were like, no.
What is fascinating though, Jeff, is like the high highs for me are different than the high highs for you. Like you're like Stardust and Kick-Ass. I'm like Layer Cake and X-Men First Class.
They're still high.
I like those. I just don't like them as much as Stardust and Kick-Ass. And I think of those four, I may only be able to find one Guy Ritchie movie that I would put even in that pantheon.
Really?
Like maybe a Snatch or a Lock, Stock lives there for me, but nothing else in his oeuvre like is as good as any one of those four movies, I don't think.
I'm also going to put out there that Lock, Stock, and Two Smoking Barrels and Snatch helped to inaugurate a whole class of the British gangster concept, right?
I agree.
Whether that's actually a net positive for cinema or not is like up to you to decide.
British gangster films existed for decades before those.
But this kind of rapid editing.
Yeah,
no, it's the Guy Ritchie style,
right?
Yeah.
It's like he has his own style.
Yes,
there's very few directors that you could, you know, Tarantino. You can call something Tarantino-esque.
Yes.
You could almost say something is Guy Ritchie-esque.
100%.
You can.
How it introduces like gangster characters, right?
So, yeah. What is the Matthew Vaughn style? I think we're beginning to see it. It's not as pretty.
He has one. Yeah.
Yeah.
He has
one. Matthew Vaughn's style is the scene in Heat where Al Pacino says, she's got a great ass in the form of a movie. That's basically what Matthew Vaughn's style is.
I think that's a little unfair. I do think it's whatever that ice skating scene was at the end
right.
of Argyle.
Okay, yes,
that's
yeah.
his
yes.
style.
Yes, that's true. That's a better.
We cannot let him be fully unleashed. It's too much. We can't take
it. All right. This has been fun chat, though, guys.
Good chat.
Yeah. So, but at the end of the day, I am still, you know, Desert Island.
In your heart, you are a Guy Ritchie fan.
Desert Island.
Yeah. yeah.
If I had to take Desert Island movies, it'd be probably Guy Ritchie movies.
Here's my capitulation.
Uh huh.
Whose next film do I think I'll like more?
I think you're going to like Guy Ritchie's next film.
Yes, 100%.
Matthew Vaughn is going down a steep cliff right now.
Yes, yeah. I have more confidence in the next film from Guy Ritchie than I do in the next film from Matthew Vaughn.
Yes.
All right.
I think we've reached a good conclusion here.
All right, that's it. That was an episode of the Filmcast After Dark. To hear the rest of the episode, sign up to be a patron at patreon.com/filmpodcast.